Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance meeting to order. Today's Wednesday, February 12th. It's a little bit after 9:04. With this is Senator Olson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Senator Fairclough. And I think Senator Kelly will be with us shortly. So we have a quorum to conduct business. However, today we are going to have an overview presentation of the Alaska from the Alaska Energy Authority on the Renewable Energy Grant Program. If you recall, this was a presentation overview that we had last year, and we did not get finished. We only got about halfway through the presentation. We had so many questions, so I want to allow the whole time this morning, if we need it, for this presentation and for questions. So then tomorrow we'll meet again, and we're going to have a report on Alaska public debt, as well as a presentation from ADA on the Interior Energy Projects and the SETS program. So with that, let's go to Sarah Fisher-Goad. If you would join us, please. She's going to be presenting the Renewable Energy Grant Program, Round 7, recommendations, and the fiscal year 2015 request, as well as give us an update on the program itself. So, Ms. Goad, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Sarah Fisher-Goad, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
I'm Sean Scaling, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency at Alaska Energy Authority.
So, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, we actually had a presentation last year that was an overview of a variety of AEA issues, and then we never really got to the Renewable Energy Fund program. So it's nice to be back in front of the committee to be able to talk about the program and to complete that presentation. The Renewable Energy Fund program has, we just completed our seventh round, and Mr. Scaling is going to go through a lot of the work that's been done and the recommendation and some of the results of the programs. We have a PowerPoint here. I did want to mention with seven rounds in 7 years, it's hard to believe that it's been those number of rounds with respect to this program. This has been an interesting program to manage. It's been a challenging program for AEA. It's been a great, I think, legislative initiative to provide funding to diversify energy portfolio and provide funding for renewable projects. I am proud of the work that AEA staff has done and the work that Sean has done to continue to improve the program and work on the program. I did want to mention we do have a Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee that does consist of public members and four legislators. That was changed when the program was extended for another 10 years. The makeup of the legislators increased with two senators, Senator Fairclough and Senator Hoffman, on the committee, and also Representative Millett and Representative Edgman. So we have a very robust advisory committee that works through this process with us. But again, we're really pleased to be able to come and talk about the program and to show you the results that we have and the I think, very good portfolio of projects that are being developed. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean.
Very good. Any questions before we turn it over? Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this is the seventh year, can you give a brief synopsis of the funding history for the first 7 years?
Is that part of your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have it has been part of the presentation. For the first six rounds, the first round one was a $100 million appropriation. Since then, we've had two rounds of $25 million, and round two was $25 million and $13,000. Round three was $25 million. Round four was a $36.6 million appropriation for the program. There was some prior projects that hadn't moved forward, so there was $36 million worth of projects. there was a $26 million appropriation. We were able to repurpose $10 million that had been allocated from prior rounds. In round five, there is $25.8 million made available. In round six, $25 million. And in round seven, the governor's budget has a request of $20 million.
So my record here, and maybe you can verify it, shows a total of $237 million. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Including the 10.
When the fund was created, was the goal to have $250 million total? Is that the... I don't know, maybe somebody knows the history. Senator Hoffman.
Well, that was the guidelines for the first 5 years, I believe, but it was renewed. And I think the legislation still has a recommended level of $50 million a year. Right. But the governor has chose to not fund it at that level, but that's a suggested number. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we can get into more detail on that, because it looks like if you're reappropriating some of the money, then you're not able to use the money that you're already getting, or maybe there's other reasons why you're reappropriating that money.
Mr. Chairman, I think just in general, the experience has been, especially with those first couple of rounds, there are circumstances where a grantee perhaps decided that it wasn't a project to move forward with. At the time, I think we had a couple projects that, one was, I believe, an independent power producer, for example, that determined that it was more beneficial to use a loan and not use a grant for the program. There are some other circumstances, some specific local issues that may have allowed for projects not to move forward. So I think of one of the sheets that we have, and I think one of the challenges of having over 200 projects and this amount of money that we're working through with projects is the best efficient way to be able to provide information. There is a report that we have provided. It's not part of the PowerPoint presentation, but it is a report that does show by region the amount of money that has been made available for a grant, the amount that's been expended, and the amount that remains available.
So you've only reappropriated the $10 million, and that's only been once?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Firklaw?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking on page 4 of the report and looking at grants issued to date. And there's a math error or something's happening. So I just didn't know if we had really done 29 and there was supposed to be a 10 added on the other side, or whether the grants issued were actually 19.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I'm embarrassed. I just saw that last night myself, that I think the tally was updated and the summary line of the total at the end wasn't. So the proper number of grants issued to date is 19, not 29. And yeah, and there's one high and one is one low as well. So I've already marked that and instructed for the March update. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I know we have lots of questions. So why don't we go ahead and let's hear your presentation first, and then we'll take the questions. And before we get started, Senator Kelly has joined us. Welcome. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here today to talk about the Renewable Energy Fund, just because I find a very exciting program that's really accomplishing the goals set forward and really helping Alaskans. So I'm just going to run through some slides, give some background first on all the projects that are underway, and then the second half will be about the recommendations for this year. And like Sarah Fisher Good mentioned, it's great to have the leadership and the vision of the legislature to establish this fund and keep it moving through these years. It's amazing what's been accomplished in the first 6 years. The first slide shows a picture of the Kaufman Cove School Garn Boiler with a staff member stoking it up. It's just one of the many really effective biomass programs that's helping schools to significantly reduce fuel costs, and we've got some examples later on of what that impact is on the school. By installing the renewable energy programs, the communities are able to be less reliant on volatile fuel prices. They now have a renewable energy source that either has no fuel cost, such as wind and hydro, or lower fuel cost in the case of biomass with wood. Another thing that we've been recognized for recently, which I'm proud of, is the vetting mechanism that this provides. This the Renewable Energy Fund has a stringent system that we look at the economic viability and technical viability of projects, compare them on a level playing field, and that's what forms our recommendation. So it's nice we've been recognized for the effectiveness of that. We've expanded our knowledge base in Alaska. It's amazing, as I said a moment ago, how much we've learned, both we and the contractors and communities, about how renewable energy works and how it works best. And local employment is another benefit. Oftentimes in the benefit-cost ratios that you see that we provide, that's the overall project benefit cost. It doesn't incorporate the money staying in communities. And so that's a real added value that's not typically recognized in the economics. On the next slide, this is the chart Senator Faircloth was just mentioning. This is just an assessment of rounds 1 through 6, how many applications we received, how many of them were funded, and the status of them, and the dollar amounts. Notice that we've got about 250 applications that are funded. So those are all projects that are either underway or closed, or so the tally of the tally of projects is really increasing. What I'm going to be doing too is working through a lot of what's in the status report booklet, and so that document, that spreadsheet that we're looking at up there, is in this document as well. This next picture is just a map of all the projects around the state. Just notice how dispersed they are all across the state. This represents projects both in reconnaissance and feasibility phases, also design and construction. But there's a very nice statewide balance. And you can also see here where the resources are. Alaska does have such great renewable energy resources. You can see the wind all along the west coast, biomass kind of clusters in the interior and southeast. Hydro is wherever there's rain and terrain, and then others are scattered in there. This is the take-home slide from my perspective. This is the projects, the 36 projects that are operational, that are saving fuel. Then this is a showing the fuel savings converted into gallons of diesel, or millions of gallons of diesel saved. You can see in the first few years it took some patience as we worked through feasibility and design and construction through operation, and then having a year or 9 months of operational data under our belt. So this is the year the rubber has hit the road. We can see we're saving now 12.4 million gallons a year. It's been actually exponential increase from 2 million to almost 4 million in 2012 to now 12. And if you look at the four-year period, 2011 to 2014, it's actually doubling every year. We're not expecting that to keep up exponentially, but this is a nice part of the curve, and we're hitting the sweet spot now. And by the way, that 2013, it says annualized. We're right now at the tail end of collecting the data for the full year, and we'll be publishing the updated status report in March that has the full 12 months. That bar at the savings of 12.4 million gallons represents about 2.3% of total electricity generated in the state, excluding industrial loads like the North Slope, for example. On the next slide, this is also in your status report, and for a clean version of it, I don't expect you can read this on the screen, but you have a full clean version on a tabloid size handout. These are the operational projects. This is the data behind that chart we were just looking at, so you can see project by project how much electricity it was generating, how much heat it was generating, the equivalent fuel in diesel, and dollars equivalent. I should mention, we'll go back one. This is grouped by color. The top ones in blue are electric-only projects. The green are electric and heat projects. And at this point, those are all wind projects that create excess wind and put that excess wind into heating buildings. And then the bottom are heat-only. This is another key slide. This is looking at the net present value capital costs of all of those 36 first projects that are in operation and the net present value benefits. And you can see the benefits way outweigh the costs for a ratio of 2.9. In order to achieve that, this is recognizes the first $82 million of renewable energy fund investment in those 36 construction projects. So this is a pretty amazing result. Thank you. Next. This just dices the data a slightly different way. This is rounds 1 through 6, all appropriations, split up by region and then by resource type. On the resource type, you can see that hydro and wind have the lion's share, and then the rest is divvied up. This slide shows the scheduled grant completion. The years 2009-2013 are actuals, and out years are anticipated. The salient feature of this is that in the early years, you can see there was more feasibility and reconnaissance level work being done. And this year, for the first time, this year being 2014, the construction projects completed are now exceeding feasibility. And it's anticipated that that'll keep on climbing. So there's a huge climb in the construction, which are the dark bars, through these years. And that's another part of the rubber hitting the road. And again, thank you for the patience it took in those first years to get these construction projects rolling. I think we're going to see this trend continuing. So a couple project highlights here. Pelican Hydro did get a Renewable Energy Fund grant. It started producing energy last February-March timeframe with about $2 million of renewable energy fund, a total cost of a little under $6 million. And the community now has a robust hydro system. The picture on the right is the SCADA system, basically showing what diesel system is on and what hydro is on. You can see the diesels are all green, which means they're all turned off, and the hydro is producing all the power for the community, which is pretty typical through most of the year now. And on the next slide, we've got some pictures. You can see before in the upper left, the wood stave and blue tarp and probably duct tape penstock. That's where the water flows from the upper lake down to the generating facility. That was subpar, of course. The lower left corner just shows an aerial view of the construction site during construction. It's a high lake, capture the water, produce pressure, and release the pressure at a generator at the base. And then the right is the surge tank that's at the bottom. Another community highlight, this is one of those biomass ones I mentioned earlier. Delta Junction has one. I showed Kaufman Cove earlier. Toke has a similar success story. Essentially, a high-efficiency boiler was put in. Some of them, this example is a chip boiler. The other one I pictured was a cordwood boiler. You know, an investment in the infrastructure produces jobs both for the stoking of the equipment and for the fuel harvesting. Money stays in the community rather than flowing out. And in all these cases, they were able to do significant things in the school, saving teachers' jobs, starting music programs again. In this case, they remodeled the kitchen and started the music program I mentioned already. And they like it so much, they're looking at possibly expanding to other buildings in the area. So that concludes the first phase, which is projects underway and rounds 1 through 6. Now I'm going to shift gears into round 7, which is our recommendations for this year.
Sean, why don't we just see if there's any questions on the first
Certainly.
6 rounds before we go to round 7. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sean, can you tell the Finance Committee, of those projects that are currently in the queue and starting, how much more cost remains for the state to complete those projects?
Off the top of my head, no, but we've got some good backup. I was trying to think if I've got something here I can get that number. So those would be the ones that are in feasibility or design that would then take the next step. There is the one question there is that the reason we break it apart into feasibility and design and whatnot is the feasibility studies are a little bit of investment to make sure that it's a good project. So not all of those necessarily will advance, so it's a little bit hard to know which of those to include and which not to. Once you get to design, it's usually pretty solid through design and construction. I'd be happy to follow up on that. And I think the, yeah, I think perhaps I'll leave it at that. Be happy to follow up.
Okay. One comment that you made, I think you said that the renewable energy projects in rural Alaska in particular have reduced their electrical costs. Is there any way to see what impact that's had on the PCE fund and how much the PCE is we're saving there by some of these renewable energy projects?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have calculated that in the past, and it is a fairly good savings to the PCE program, as well as the schools often are seeing benefit. Of course, the communities are seeing benefit too in the businesses in the community that don't receive PCE. So we do have a pie chart that breaks that out, and I'd be happy to follow up with that as well.
Okay. Yes, if you wouldn't mind, please. Additional questions? Not. Well, Senator Dunleavy? No question? Okay. Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay, so that was rounds 1 through 6. Now for round 7. We accepted applications starting in July. The deadline was end of September. We then entered a busy pattern of evaluation, technical and economic evaluation in the fall, brought our recommendations to the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee January 7. They made recommendations, and our EEA's final recommendations are in the middle pages 10 and 11 of the booklet, or you also have a clean tabloid size spreadsheet of the recommended projects. This year, let me see, working off of the tabloid size page that is color-coded, it's kind of darker pink and blue at the top and lighter pink and blue at the bottom. The blues are the electric projects, or electric and heat, or transmission, or anything that's other than pure heat, and the orange or salmon color are heat projects, heat-only projects. AEA, through our evaluation, recommended a set of projects. And by the way, I should mention that the bar is set a little bit higher now. We have a technical cutoff score that raised a little bit this year, just to make sure that the recommended projects are very solidly recommended projects. And so on the first page here, on pages 10 and 11, or if you're working off the spreadsheet, the front side of it is the recommended. On the back side, which is in all white, on pages 12 and 13 of the booklet, are the not recommended projects. So of the recommended, then, the way our process works, we go through a four-stage process. Stage 3 puts the projects through weighted criteria to recognize the legislature's intent and the statutory language, and then comes up with a ranking of the projects. We then, this year in particular, for the first time, we based on feedback from the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee and others, we actually produced two lists for the advisory committee to look at, a heat list and a non-heat list. And we made quite a few changes to emphasize heating this year because it's such a huge cost for Alaskans all around. What we're looking at here is after the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee's recommendations, those lists were commingled into one list, but you can still easily parse them out just by the color coding of the blue and orange. So the top darker ones fit within the governor's budget of $20 million. The remaining, while recommended, are outside the governor's budget, and the total of those is $41.5 million. And then, of course, on the others are not recommended. And go ahead to the next slide. Thanks. I've just got a couple maps here depicting where these projects are. You can these again are in the status report. This particular picture is all the heat applications that are recommended. The dark ones with dark numbering under them are projects that are in the top $20 million, and the other ones are recommended but not in the top $20 million. And then on the next slide, Thanks. These are the electric projects, or we call them standard because it's electric and other. And again, the dark ones are recommended, and the light ones are recommended in the top 20 million. And next slide. Again, just slicing and dicing different ways. This is recommended funding by type. You can see what it means by the top tier and second tier is, again, the top 20 million versus the others that are recommended. This doesn't include those that are not recommended, so it shows it by region and by funding type, energy resource, that is. And I think we might be getting to the last slide here, which is the same slide but for the electric projects. Boy, I feel like I think that was the last slide, right? One more? Okay. I feel like I went fairly quickly on that. I'm happy to answer any questions. Trying to gather my thoughts as to what I should probably spend more time on, but perhaps questions would be appropriate at this point.
Okay, very good. Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the Renewable Energy Round 7 statewide recommendations and funding. And below the funding line, I see two projects dropped below for additional requests. Mr. Chairman, I should just put on the record, I was a dissenting vote at the renewable energy meeting in not taking the staff's recommendations, and I believe I was the only dissenting member, so I just put that on the record. And so if we could talk a bit about that process and just pull that out a little bit more, that this is the first time that the committee hasn't taken staff's recommendations and reprioritized the projects.
Yeah, please. Can you elaborate on the process a little bit?
Yes. In the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee's significant role at that meeting is typically to do the regional spreading. And so what staff presents typically is the list of projects in a ranked order. This year it was actually the list of both the heat and the electric projects on two lists in ranked order, and then identifying through our regional spreading formula, which identifies in the regions that have been underrepresented in all of the previous rounds cumulatively, it'll identify the top project or projects for consideration of the committee to possibly advance into the funding level. And so that part, that's a regular part of the REFAC's purpose at that meeting. This time the committee also did recommend partially funding two hydro projects, which are listed on lines 16 and 17, Allison Creek and Stetson, I'm sorry, 15 and 16, Stetson Creek and Allison Creek, in order to fund one of the regional funding priorities within the 20 million. That's the blue line, Igiagic Wind Resource Feasibility, and an additional five heat projects and fully fund another one. So prior to this, the line was drawn at line 20, Haynesboro would have been partially funded and the rest not funded. So the committee recommended that. Senator Fairclough recommended that Stetson and Allison, if going in that direction, if partially funded as recommended here, be next in line for funding just below the line, and so that's why those two are below the line.
Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, the committee reviewed the prioritizations for all of Alaska, and the staff made recommendations to balance that. And certainly I respect my colleagues that serve on that committee. We've just, in a time of, as the finances tighten, it becomes harder to get dollars. And so the committee, from my perspective, focused on large projects to cut out to make sure that we could get to smaller communities. And maybe that's the right thing to do. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware that we weren't taking the original staff recommendations, and we had developed a fairly thorough process that had criteria to try to make it fair for everyone. To that end, my colleague at this table made a very good notation, and I want to put that on the table to support him in that as we look at funding electrical costs, it's a little bit different than heating costs. If Alaskans are cold, that makes a big difference between being able to turn the lights on. But if they're cold, it's actually their livelihood. And so I do want to support Senator Hoffman in my belief that heat should have a priority over electricity, because it could be the difference between life and death in other communities. And so I just want the Senate Finance Committee to know what's transacting at those committees that are making recommendations, and that you can already see the battle over funding, per se. That's why I asked the previous question, how much is on the table, and I'll ask it again. Sean, on round seven, how much are we committing to that we're going to tell people we have, that we need to additionally fund later? And if you don't have it today, that's all right.
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, the top, well, all of the projects show what phase they're in, and you can see the top ones almost all end in construction. So it's a very heavy dose of construction here. In fact, every heat project ends in construction, and I believe there's one feasibility and one, two that end in feasibility and one in design, if I'm remembering correctly. That looks like a couple other feasibilities. So it's heavy on the final construction and still investing in other projects that look good.
Go ahead, Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, my only other comment, and I want to support all those projects. The issue is, can we finish them if we're making that commitment right now? And looking at our cash flow, whether $20 million, how much longer will that take to actually reach completion on these projects? And so I did bring up at the advisory board meeting whether we should be funding design at all right now, that they're good projects, that they would qualify, but should we take on, as the Senate Finance Committee capital budget chairman said last year and the governor is saying this year, should we make sure that we can complete those that are in the queue while we look at that cash flow constraint? Because we do expect to be able to move forward and fund those projects later, but is completion better to hold some of that funding and complete projects that might be further down that were ready for construction versus additional design right now? And again, I have no skin in the game on any individual project. I'm just saying that if there's $20 million, would it behoove the legislature to try to complete those projects on this recommendation, as you've suggested in the past, Mr. Chairman, or fund more design? And we do want to have things in the queue, so it's a careful balance.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Faircloth, for those comments. But there were two points that I would like to make on the list. I think the recommendation of the committee was to recommend, according to what the governor had proposed to the legislature, but it was their recommendation to the committee to fund it at the $22.8 million to include the other two projects. And I think that if you could revert to slide 7, I think slide 7 is the tail of the tape, which basically shows what the state of Alaska has invested in our net present value benefits. To me, we shouldn't be cutting back, and we should try to achieve what the law intended, which is going toward the $50 million. The committee, and I've been on the committee since its inception, has moved drastically toward heating, which in the past primarily the grants were going toward electrical costs, but everyone knows that the heating costs are the ones that are the big stealers out of the pockets of rural people, particularly in Alaskans in general. But when you look at the cost-benefit ratio of the projects, I don't think that people can argue in the state of Alaska what we're getting for our dollar. And I make these comments because we are a northern community, and we should be leading the way in following through with renewable energy. And I bring this up because we do have a goal, and I've asked the department to say, are we on track to get to meet that goal at our current level of $20 million? And I'd say that we aren't. So we should acknowledge the fact that we have that goal, the governor has acknowledged it, and we should, as a state, step up to the plate, because the cost-benefit ratio is clear, and Alaskans are benefiting, and we are the most expensive state to live in, and we should try to make it more affordable to live in the state. And again, it's irrefutable what how we're spending those dollars and the benefits that we're getting. $20 million is a lot of money, but we are missing the boat if we don't acknowledge the benefits of this program and step up to the plate above and beyond what the governor has requested. That's the prerogative of this committee and the legislature. And when we renewed that legislation, our goal was to try to hit $50 million. I'm not saying that we should do that, but I have serious concerns that the amount of funds requested this year, again, is dropping $5 million. And I know the financial problems the state of Alaska has, but Alaskans, I think, deserve the opportunity to live in a state where it's more affordable.
Okay, thank you. So the goal you're referring to is the goal of $50 million a year, or 50% being renewable?
Well, renewable, what was the goal again?
Yeah, 50% renewable energy, electricity by 2025.
Yeah, but I think that included Susitna Montana Dam, if I recall.
That's right.
Which is kind of on a slow pace now until we see what happens with the gas pipeline. So I think Senator Olson was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question that I have is, how often does the committee not accept the recommendations of the staff and how they've ranked things? Very frequently, not very often, once in a blue moon?
No, through the chair, I would just phrase a little differently, but go for it, Sarah, if you've got a...
Through the chair, Senator Olson, Sean had mentioned, we did do two lists this year. We had a heating list and an electricity list, and others, or the combination. So there was a little bit of a different presentation when the advisory committee met to discuss the heating projects and these other projects. And again, this had been kind of a long-standing discussion with AEA staff and management and with the advisory committee on making sure that we emphasize heat and we provide technical assistance to help applicants. So we've been trying to refine that process. That was also reinforced by our evaluation of the program at after the fifth year on how can we make the program better. And we had a company came in, and Vermont Energy company came in. They contracted with us to provide us an evaluation of the program, and one of the recommendations was to actually figure out a way to kind of split these applications so it wasn't a one-size-fit-all. So we thought for round seven it would be a good opportunity to have these two lists. So in the past, the committee, in order for staff to fulfill the recommendation for the regional spreading, we have recommended projects to help fulfill the regional spreading, and that's been presented to the committee, and the committee's been involved in that. What's made it a little bit different this year is that, again, we had these two lists. So the committee's recommendation was to go further down the heating list by taking a portion off of these two other projects. So it's a little bit of a complicated question. It's a little bit different than what we had recommended by just down the list, but we have made regional adjustments in the past. But they didn't go down the list to take heating project number 20 and fund that. They just went further down the heating list. And sometimes I think if we had the two lists, it maybe make that a little bit more obvious.
Right, so.
My last question has to do with, as I look at, the governor's public policy, he's been and a strong advocate for roads to resources, for mineral extraction, as well as renewable energy. And what I see is that the Amador District will always be there and that rain will always fall. But I see that the Cosmos Hydroelectric Dam project that is would address many of the high electrical costs as well as the heating costs in the Amador Mining District was not funded. What am I missing, I guess, is my real question.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the through the technical and economic evaluation of that project, it just didn't look like a technically or economically viable project at the time. Given all that we know and what the applicant knows at this point, so we're afraid that it would actually be a burden to the communities rather than an asset to them.
One last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with. So, are you recommending that through a capital request that this project not be funded because of the economy, as economic situation, as well as the technical difficulties that we're up against?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the yes, we are. We're trying to put forward just the projects that really look solid and are achieving the goal of improved energy. And that one just didn't appear that way to us at the time of review. The economics looked poor. It's the by far the farthest north hydro facility in the U.S. at least, and they couldn't provide us examples of other places. So putting water in a penstock above ground in the winter, there are an awful lot of questions there, and we're trying to avoid putting a lot of money into projects that
thank you, Mr.
won't
Chairman.
Be tied up. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Senator Dunleavy?
I'm good, thank you.
You're good? Okay, take you off the list. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sean, and Sarah, either one can answer this question, whoever feels like they can take it. Is the emphasis from the committee, advisory committee, has got an emphasis on heating, not to discount that electricity still high in the villages as well. Has AEA and the committee, do they have a plan to come back, provided we can keep funding going forward, and then look at these electrical projects in these communities where we've made an emphasis on heat to come back and then address the high electric cost as well?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the application process and the way the program has been funded is remains to be open for all of those projects, whether they're electric, a combination of electric and heat, or heating projects. What we did for this round, which was unique for round 7, and we will be meeting with the advisory committee to determine whether we want to continue this or do we want to go back to one list. Any electric project is if the project is eligible and the applicant is eligible is still eligible to file the application and to be ranked through this vetting process. So we're not discounting the electric projects. It was just an opportunity to take a look at heating in a little bit of a different, more isolated ranking process versus the electricity. And again, the goal was to emphasize the heating needs.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for Sarah. Next question, just real briefly here. So let's just go back to our statewide recommendation project funding on your list here. Let's go down to 22. So the way I read this, Minto is in the queue this year.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. And there's, you don't see no problems. They're fully going to be fully funded going forward for that project.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, I guess I'll ask the question, although because I'm not sure if we're going to be able to have an opportunity to have a discussion on the issues I'm looking at here. So I understand this is about renewables, but is there anywhere down the road here in the session, or within what you're working on, or maybe some of the other committees, but is coal no longer considered a viable possibility for, and I know we're talking about renewables here, but I'm just, I don't know if I'll get you guys back here to have this conversation. But is coal pretty much a dead issue as far as the state is concerned, or are there projects that are moving ahead in that area?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, actually the University of Alaska Fairbanks is working to replace their combined heat and power plant as a coal plant with an addition a coal plant. So there's definitely a use for the resource. It's mostly in the interior. We don't have an issue with coal. In fact, Golden Valley Electric Association, a lot of their, you know, besides the power that they receive from Bradley Lake Hydro, their most cost-effective energy source is their coal-fired plants in Healy. So we know that coal remains a very viable and valuable resource to use for electricity. And of course, as the university has demonstrated, combined heat and power. We are in a situation where we develop the programs and we manage the programs that we're funded for in our statutes to run. Since coal is not an eligible fuel source for us in the Renewable Energy Fund program, so I guess that's where we don't have a bias against coal. However, it's not something of our main focus of this program, which has a lot of projects moving forward to it.
Right, and I mentioned in our preface, excluding this, the concept of renewables, does AEA have a coal plan at all? If communities come to you and they want to look at a coal plant, is there still a mechanism for that discussion to happen?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we'd be certainly happy to sit down and talk about any community that's looking at a coal plant. We have subject matter experts that can certainly provide information on, technical analysis and assistance for the development of that, and also just even, you know, either informally or even formally providing any information and feedback for them.
Thank you. Through the chair, one last question.
Sure, go ahead.
And again, this is not necessarily a renewable question, but I figured I'd ask it now. Will there be a mechanism for communities, especially rural communities, to come to AEA to ask for assistance in the exploration of gas for residential and community use, not necessarily to commercialize it, but to become a new source of power for both heat and electricity in some of our small rural communities? Has that discussion taken place, or will it take place? Outside of the renewable?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, there's actually a provision in the Renewable Energy Fund program to allow for where renewables aren't available for small gas to be used. There are some limitations on that, but it does have a provision for a small gas fine potentially to be used in the community. I think that a lot of times with any development of a resource like that is the exploration and the cost to do that, the load in a community for a localized use doesn't match up very well.
Thank you.
If I can just follow up on Senator Dunleavy's question, do you know what the status is on the Healy Clean Coal Plant? And I get it's near Fairbanks, I think.
Through the chair, ADA and Golden Valley have completed the sale has happened with respect to that project. I'm actually I'm going to throw that one to my ADA colleagues. I believe they're in front of the committee tomorrow. That it would probably be more appropriate for them to discuss what the status of that is.
Okay. Senator Kelly, do you know the status?
There are a lot more details to this, obviously, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's about a year out. They're doing testing now, and it's going to take a little while to get it ramped up, but I think all the pieces are in place. There's really nothing missing in the formula to make that thing a viable power plant. I think we're there.
I think when your brother was in the House Finance Committee, he was saying the same thing. So I'm just hoping in my lifetime I see that Healy Clean coal power plant working.
You may have been more optimistic, and I have more reason to be optimistic.
Okay, very good. So is hydro actually considered a renewable energy?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is.
At the federal level or just the state?
Mr. Chairman, it's actually, we've had some interesting discussions about that. The Department of Energy does consider renewable or hydro a renewable resource.
Does or does not?
They do not.
Okay. Senator Kell?
So what I'd like to do, Senator Hoffman, I think, you know, the fund is a good idea, but I'm not sure that we don't get distracted on the renewables a lot. We talked here, we're talking about non-renewable energy because that's what we've got. And we have trillions of cubic feet of gas, so we shouldn't be discounting that as a solution for rural Alaska. And I'd kind of like this fund be changed from the Renewable Energy Fund to the How the Heck Do We Figure Out Our Energy Needs in Rural Alaska Fund, whatever it is, regardless of some federal designation or definition of what is renewable or not renewable. I think it's a good idea to have this fund, and I wouldn't be surprised, I'm not going to ask you to talk about this, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is a renewable energy fund because it needed support in the building to have a fund that took care of kind of everybody's philosophy and needs and those kinds of things. What we're really talking about here is rural Alaska, and if it's petroleum that puts a BTU in a home at an affordable rate, I don't think we should care. I don't think we should care if it's coal or gas or some other fantasy that might come along that might actually work technologically at some time. But I think we kind of talk about the wrong things around here because of the definition of this fund, when really I think what we need to do is figure out rural Alaska's energy, and I do not care whether that's renewable or not, because frankly, we have the world's supply of coal up around Kotzebue. As far as I'm concerned, that's renewable enough. We'll never run out of that. We'll never run out of the trillions of cubic feet of gas that we have. Those are all renewable enough for me.
Okay, very good. Senator Hoffman?
Well, I won't speak to this bill was a House bill, so but we modified it drastically here in the Senate Finance Committee.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, Senator Hoffman, but I don't think you care how you get your heating in rural Alaska.
I was just going to say that. You know, the people in rural Alaska want affordable energy. And one other potential is peat. And I've discussed it with AEA, Sarah Fisher Goad, and others. And there's great, great potential in the interior Kuskokwim River. There's trillions of cubic feet of peat. And it is used in Scandinavian countries quite extensively, but has not taken on too much of a significant source for some reason in the United States. But Donlin Creek has a report, and they were going to use peat as one of its substantial sources of energy to develop Donlin Creek, and I'm in the process of getting that report. But McGrath and other upper Kuskokwim communities are very interested in looking at peat, and the benefit would be if that were viable. The barges that go up there bringing product and stuff come back down empty, and they could potentially bring that product to the rest of the Kuskokwim as a form of heat that could be generated into electricity as well. And I think that the co-chairman from Fairbanks is correct. The people out in rural areas and in Alaska in general are more interested in making Alaska an affordable place to live.
Very good. And Senator Hoffman, speaking of Donlin Creek, were they talking about building a gas pipeline from?
That is their primary avenue right now. Their plans are to build a 24-inch line from Beluga Point up to Donlin Creek, and the cost is several billions of dollars, and they are looking at any energy source of natural gas, probably from outside the Cook Inlet Basin.
Okay,
Very good. I think Senator Faircloth?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Sean and Sarah have done what we've asked them to do through policy. So first, I want to say thank you for all the hard work. And then what we're discussing, even what we were discussing at the advisory level was, if we're going to prioritize heat, that's really not consistent with the policy. And so if the department went through an audit and they were refocusing on heat versus electricity, there might be an audit finding to say that, you know, they're not meeting their primary mission or they've somehow moved away from that. So if we really believe that AEA and the renewables should start prioritizing heat, we may want to take that up. And if we want them to look at a region and say, are there other hydrocarbon assets out in the community and rural, that's on us to frame that task to them. So I think it's a great conversation, and I think coming from the other body and part of that conversation, the idea was that we want to make sure that all people are healthy. And so in replacing that diesel fuel, people wanted to make sure that hydrocarbon use was limited so that people in smaller communities would be healthy too. But again, it's about looking at the region and seeing what opportunities there are to lower costs and certainly have funds that are available for renewable, but could we organize energy in a way where we layer it so that AEA has a broader mission to look if there's a coal laying on the beach per se, that can you put a small unit out there more effectively to help reduce those heating costs for our neighbors?
Very good. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question?
Just a quick follow-up comment through the chair. It's just I agree. I feel sorry for folks because we kind of whipsaw them back and forth all the time. It's just the way politics can be. But if there was a focus somewhere on getting the cheapest BTUs to communities, I think that opens up a whole. You're less constrained, and folks even talked about nuclear, and I'm sure people think I'm kind of a wackadoodle bringing that up. But the point being, if you look at bringing the cheapest BTU to a community, you can be potentially looking at importing propane from outside, which some people right now would say, no, we can't do that. But if it's going to be cheaper to do that to a particular community, why constrain ourselves to just certain limitations? And I think renewables are a great idea because supposedly they're renewable, but if it costs you so much to get that BTU, I just think we should open up the toolbox to allow more tools to be put in there for cheaper BTU. Thank you.
Hey, I'll let you respond there, sir. But let me. I have a follow-up question that I meant to ask earlier. Well, first of all, is it possible to get a spreadsheet that shows the funding by the different rounds?
Yes.
Okay. And then. At one time, and refresh my memory, at one time $4 million was kind of the maximum amount that a project could receive, but I'm wondering, is that $4 million for each phase, like reconnaissance, construction, design?
Mr. Chairman, we had two tiers of maximum amount, and that's been cumulative per project through the entire phases. Originally, it was $4 million in high-cost areas, $2 million in low-cost areas. Through the deliberations of with the REFAC committee, we made some adjustments that maybe we should see something a little bit higher, $4 million for lower-cost areas, $8 million for high-cost areas. And I think part of that, if I recall the discussion, I may have to ask Senator Hoffman to help out on that. I think part of it is as you see projects moving towards construction, that's the time when you need maybe some additional funds. So that threshold has been increased. But again, when we do look at the evaluation of the project, we're not just looking at what a community or what an applicant is asking for. We're looking at the cost of the project and what they need to achieve that next phase.
Well, I guess my question is, if we're paying up to $8 million in each phase, and there's four different phases, do we have $32 million into the project?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. It's $8 million cumulative for, not per phase, but for all phases, so cumulative of the phases per project.
Yeah, actually, it would be $8 million or $4 million for the design and construction phase. In addition, the reconnaissance or feasibility can be up to 20% of the total anticipated project cost.
Okay, very good.
So there are a couple of them you'll see, just a little bit over that limit, not very many.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed there was a lot of wind projects in Southwest Alaska. For some reason, that doesn't surprise me, Senator Hoffman.
Southwest.
Pretty windy area over there. Go ahead.
Southwest has a lot of similarities to this building. There's a lot of wind out there.
Very good. I think, Sarah, did you want to follow up on some previous questions, and then I'll go to Senator Dunleavy?
Mr. Chairman, I did want to take an opportunity to talk about, we are talking about a renewable energy fund, which is one of the tools in our toolbox. We have other, as I mentioned, the technical assistance that we provide. For rural Alaska in particular, we have rural power system upgrades and bulk fuel upgrades. So we are looking at what is good for a community. And first and foremost, we are looking at affordable energy. And one of the reasons that we have four-stage process for this project is stage two is an economic phase. So what we're looking first and foremost is the economic viability of the projects, and we do put these through a fairly significant vetting process on the economics. So we support the fact that we think renewables is an important part of the portfolio. However, affordable energy is first and foremost what we're looking at. And so I just want to make sure that the committee understands that we are looking at that holistically, that this is one of the tools, this is a very important tool for AEA to fulfill the programs and the missions that you've given us, but we are looking at other opportunities. We do have regional planning that has also been incorporated beyond renewables, looking at whether LNG can play a greater role in other areas, expanding beyond, for example, the Interior Energy Project that you'll hear more about tomorrow. So we are looking at that as a fuel source and any other fuel source, and working with the regions to kind of develop that. So again, we have a portfolio of programs. We have we have subject matter experts to actually look at what's the again, the primary mission is affordable energy. Renewable is a portion of that.
Very good. And I do want to go to Senator Bishop, but I want to follow up just on one other comment. Some of these areas that you're proposing the projects and we're providing money to, they don't appear to have much of an economic base. Where do they get their matching monies from?
Mr. Chairman, we actually have a weighting system where significant weight is provided for matching funds. However, a match isn't necessarily required. So that's also been part of the discussion as we develop the request for applications. That's been a discussion for a long period of time on whether match is required or how we weigh it. The statute does require us to do a significant weight on the match, but as you know, in a lot of rural communities, there is not a lot of opportunity to, there's not an economic base necessarily to provide much of a match at times.
Okay. Very good. Senator Bishop, I know you've had a question there for a while. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a more of a comment, and if you feel like responding, that's fine. If you don't, stop by and we can dive deeper into this. But as Senator Hoffman's alluded to, there is a lot of wind around here, and here's some more. But do you have the assets in AEA to do your job? And you don't have to answer that right now. You can think about that and come back to me. Number two, if you were king for a day, what would you do different if you had the assets to execute your mission? And I think all of us at this table, really, at the end of the day, we're trying to knock off these projects that we've been talking about for the last 50 years. And, I mean, obviously the committee's done good work. Look at it here, just round seven. There's 29 projects there, but I'll just leave it at that.
And I'll follow up on that. And, again, you may not want to answer this question outright as well, and that's fine. You refer to ADA. A lot of the projects that you're working with also overlap with ADA. Is that relationship working well for you in AEA?
Senator Meyer, I think it has, as this committee knows, ADA and AEA are sister agencies. We have staff that are staff that are shared. We have a lot of shared resources. Our finance department, our procurement department, our deputy director of finance is both a shared position for ADA and AEA. Our board of directors are the same members. I think there's a tremendous opportunity, and I think ADA and AEA do work very well together on making sure that our financing of projects, energy projects, that there is an opportunity for us to to share staff and resources to do that, and to to share expertise. I think the Interior Energy Project is a great example of both ADA and AEA working together on a specific project. We collaborate quite often as we can. I think our missions are, we're about reducing energy costs, but there's that economic development aspect to that. And so, where we can, we want to make sure that we continue to be definitely aligned for purpose on ADA and AEA.
Very good. And I know you're not prepared. This isn't part of your presentation, but it is part of the 50% goal, the Wantanas-Susitna. Can you give us an update on that? Because I know the whole focus this year has been on the gas pipeline and not so much on the dam.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually, I know we'll be in front of you for capital budget next week. I was, we'll have more of an opportunity at that point to talk a little bit further on that. I guess with respect to the Susitna-Wantana project, it is a significant part of the 50% renewable goal. We think that that's a we were funded years ago to determine what a large hydro project would make sense in the rail belt area. We had determined that it was Susitna-Wantana and been moving forward on that with the licensing process. With respect to the with the budget request this year and where we're at, we are working through our permit requirements with the village corporations in the region in Siri. We are making progress with respect to that. And I'm sorry, I'm going through this rather quickly. We did complete our first year and filed a draft interim study report or initial study report with FERC. It's over 6,000 pages of documents that outlined the accomplishments of the 58 studies on where we've been. We're in the middle of our two-year study period. We had a very successful field season that produced that document. The reason that we've asked for an extension with FERC to provide some additional time was so we could have some more clarity with respect to where we're at with respect to the budget and when we'll complete the second portion of our field studies. So again, we've got very good data and information that has come in with respect to the development of the project. We are working with the village corporations in Siri to make sure that we get the permit to complete it. Although we did not have access in 2013 with respect to those lands, of the 10 focus areas that we had studies going on, and again, a portion of all 58 studies in these various focus areas, we had full access to 7 areas. We had limited access to 3 areas. So again, we had a very significant field season. Our assumptions for the project are remaining true. We haven't seen anything that shows that we have significant increase in costs with respect to the project. We're not seeing where we can't produce the energy that we expect. We are working on what a financial plan would look like in order to finance this project. And again, for a 50-year average cost of power, we're still seeing a 7 cents over that time, a 7 cents per kilowatt hour cost of power.
Yeah, I brought it up today because I know you are coming before us next week to discuss your capital projects, but we're going to have several departments before us, and we got you here at least for another 45 minutes, so next week may be rushed. Additional questions for Senator Olson?
Actually, can we continue on with the same project? The
go ahead, sure.
I guess how optimistic are you that the a dam of this magnitude will come to fruition, that 10 years down the way we can say, well, we either have cheaper electricity coming through for the rail belt, or that we spent another $500 million on a project that has been going on and discussed and funded for the last 30 years, and nothing has come out with that. I mean, the Susitna Dam has been on the books, and there are multiple reports and studies that have shown what it's shown. I'm not even familiar with what those reports are, but I know that there's a number of significant money has been spent over the last 30 years trying to get it to up to speed.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the former Alaska Power Authority had been funded in the 80s to pursue this project. It was actually a much different project at the time, and there was significant dollars that were spent in the 80s with respect to this project. And recently, we were funded again to move forward on the licensing of this project. It's a different project than what had been anticipated in the 80s. This project was evaluated a bit differently, and looking at specifically replacing diversifying the portfolio and helping to meet the 50% renewable goal. But again, I think what we're seeing on the project, and quite frankly, I think in the 80s, what was seen is that the project is it is a good project that can provide a significant benefit to over 80% of the population.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
As I listened to him, I realize he's not a public policymaker, but you listen to Rick Rydell on the radio, and he's saying that this project will never be built. And here's somebody that's part of a very conservative person who's projecting that, because he's been around for a time or two. And I guess the real concern that I have is that some of the lands that are going to be there that are owned by some of the Native corporation you alluded to, Siri, and those are not even in place. There's no agreements to go ahead and use that to go ahead and put the dam in place. So I guess I see more and more issues that are out there that may be that this project is never going to be built, as Rick Bridell said.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, our conversations with the village corporations, I think, have been very positive with respect to them as a landowner and what they would need in a permit. I think our discussions have been that they're supportive on us being able to move forward with the project. And there's kind of two phases of there's the initial permitting phases to receive access to complete the studies, and then there's also the longer term discussions with respect to the development of the project and the anticipation of how they would fit into the development of the project. And I think both the AEA project team and the village corporations are anxious to actually have those discussions, those longer term discussions with respect to the development of the project.
Last comment, Mr. Chairman, has to do with her comment about the village corporations that are positive. I guess the question that I've been hearing from them is that what they're really afraid of is that the state is going to exercise eminent domain, go ahead and take over these lands at less than market value. And so that's where I see a real concern by some of the landowners that are out there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. You want to follow up on that, sir?
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilson, again, we've been in conversations with the village corporations and Surrey with respect to the use of the lands. We are very anxious to sit down and actually talk about some more of the longer term issues, the development of the project, what that would mean to land that they specifically selected around the project area, and how we can actually partner on some of those developments. So again, I think we've had some very good relationships. We are in a negotiation process with them with respect to the land access permit, but have had discussions on a bit of the longer term issues that we would like to mutually agree to as we move forward.
Thank you. I just remembered we do have a joint session at 10:45, so we'll want to knock off here in the next 10 minutes. So is there any additional questions, thoughts, comments? Okay. Well, I think we've had a good discussion here today. Thank you, Sarah and Sean, for coming before us, and we will see you again next week. We'll be going over your capital budget. So with that, if there's nothing else, come before the committee. As I mentioned earlier, we will have Ada will be the last half of the meeting. First half will be just an update on our total debt that we have as a state, Alaska Public Debt Report. I believe that's, will that be Devin Mitchell doing that? Okay. So that'll be the first half, and then the second half, I guess we'll see if we can afford Ada after that. So, no, just kidding. Okay, with that, we're adjourned until 9 o'clock tomorrow.